WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. Yes, December is knocking on the door, folks. And you know that what that means, right? Yeah. Yeah, folks. The college football playoff is right around the corner. And bowl games galore, right? So we'll talk about the latest edition of the college football playoff rankings that will take place tonight on national television via ESPN. And, of course, this will be the final pre-ranking prior to the final one. The one and only, the one that really counts on December 4th, all right? So we'll sort of throw around our thoughts and predictions on what's going through the committee's head after what took place this past weekend in the world of college football. And you'll also get to hear a pretty funny and candid rant from Alabama head football coach Nick Saban. If you didn't hear this rant, folks, you're missing out. I loved it, okay? Another classic Saban rant. And that'll start off that conversation. We will also chat about the Detroit Lions sitting first place in the NFC North. We will give you a preview of the Michigan State men's basketball game as they hit the road tonight out in NC to take on the Duke Blue Devils, one of the game's best teams and has been for quite some time. And we will also invite the one, the only, Herb Brogan, who is the head coach of the Jackson Lumen Christie Titans football team that won, yeah, a state championship in Division 5. This past weekend. Well, actually in D6, excuse me, this past weekend. So you don't want to miss that chat. Herb will join us here on the show, and he'll talk about that incredible moment for that program. Actually, the Titans' first state championship in 7 years. What a moment it was. And we will also even chime in on the current state of the Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Red Wings. But before all of that jazz, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with news concerning Demetrius Cox, a starting defensive back and team captain for the Michigan State football team. Cox says that he was falsely accused of a misdemeanor assault last week. Cox has not been formally charged and actually has 10 days from the offense to appear in 54B District Court here in East Lansing for his arraignment. Now, Cox was released from jail at the East Lansing Police Department sometime Thursday morning after posting bond. Cox did not play in Saturday's game against Penn State because he violated team rules, according to head coach Mark D'Antonio. Now, if convicted, Cox faces up to 93 days in jail, a $500 fine, or both. Shocking news there. All right. This wasn't shocking, though. Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh has been fined. We all saw this coming, right? $10,000 by the Big Ten for violating the league's sportsmanship policy in his post-game news conference following the Wolverines' double overtime loss to the Ohio State Buckeyes. Harbaugh said that he was bitterly disappointed in officiating in the loss, and that likely costed Michigan a spot in the college football playoff. That loss did. Now, the conference commented on the situation in a release that stated, quote, coaches are teachers as well, and there is an expectation they set the example for students and others in the area of sportsmanship. Totally agree with the fine, but $10,000, that's a drop in the bucket for a man like Jim Harbaugh. He's rolling the dough, all right, to say the least. Michigan defensive coordinator Don Brown has been named a finalist for the Broyles Award, which is given to the nation's top assistant coach in his first year at Michigan. Brown's defense finished the regular season numero uno in third down D, passing yards allowed, and tackles for a loss. Michigan ended number two in total defense, scoring defense, sacks, pass efficiency, defense in red zone defense, number two in total in those totals. Brown is one of five finalists, joining Alabama defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt, Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables, Colorado defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt, and Pittsburgh offensive coordinator Matt Canada. All right, moving along, the Michigan State men's basketball team travels to Durham, North Carolina to take on the number five Duke Blue Devils at the Cameron Indoor Stadium. That's right, Coach K Court. Tonight's game marks the final of one of the toughest opening months in college basketball for the Spartans. You can make an argument that this is the toughest November in program history. Probably is, folks. Duke is the fourth-ranked opponent for MSU in November alone. The Spartans suffered losses to other three, number two Kentucky, number 10 Arizona, and number 20 Baylor. Tip-off set for 9:30 p.m. Both the Michigan State and Michigan men's basketball teams have fallen out of the Associated Press top 25 rankings. Michigan State was ranked number 12 during the preseason, but fell after suffering those three losses that I mentioned, with all three coming against those ranked opponents. Now, the Wolverines cracked the top 25 last week after starting the season 4-0, but were unable to hang on to that number 24 spot after suffering a 15-point loss to South Carolina. Eastern Michigan is headed to the postseason for the first time since 1987. That's right. The Eagles gridiron squad has accepted an invitation to the 2016 Popeyes. I love me some Popeyes. Popeyes Bahamas Bowl against Conference USA opponent Old Dominion. Now, the game is set for Friday, December 23rd at Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium in Nassau, Bahamas, and will air live on ESPN. The 7-5 Eagles will finish with a winning record for the first time since 1995. Congratulations to EMU. That is huge. The Detroit Pistons return to the court tonight to take on Michael Jordan's Charlotte Hornets at the Time Warner Cable Arena for the second game of a four-game road trip. Now, the Pistons have looked dismal on the road, signified by, their 1-8 record when playing away from the Palace. Now, the Hornets won the season series 2-1 last season with guard Kemba Walker averaging almost 20 points, 5 dimes, and 4 boards against the D. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. And last but not least, the Detroit Red Wings, that's right, Hockey Town, are looking to bounce back from, a 2-1 overtime loss to Montreal on Saturday. As they take on the Dallas Stars tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Joe, the Red Wings are 2-0-1 in their past three games after going 2-8-1 in their previous 11. I really don't know if the Red Wings are going to make the playoffs this year, folks. I don't know. I really think that the longest postseason streak in North American sports may end this season. I don't know. All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and talk about anything that is on your noggin, you know that number. Probably got it on speed dial, as I like to say. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Or you can even tweet us by two ways, at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR. Multiple ways to weigh in and so much to talk about on today's hour. Let's get right to it.
Breezy Beats Production. two questions if I could. One, Damian Harris said after the game that if anybody says Alabama could afford to win this game, they just hadn't played, I mean, lose this game, they haven't played sports. Do you expect, it's a big game, obviously, but do you also expect kind of competitive fire that you can't let, that won't let that mindset creep in?
Well, that's certainly not the mindset that we want. I mean, you know, this is a big game for us. It's an opportunity to win the SEC championship, you know, which to me is a very, very significant accomplishment. And we hold that in very high esteem, having the ability to do that, having the opportunity to do it, having the ability to play for it, and to think that, I mean, you all put everything about the playoffs, man. That's all you care about. You don't care about any bowl games. You don't care about any teams in the country that aren't in the playoffs. I don't know. If we don't win this game, maybe we throw a stink bomb out there. Maybe we don't get in the playoffs. I don't know. You guys got all the answers to all that, but I don't. All I know is if we play and we play well, we control our own destiny in terms of what we do. So I'd really rather not have any more questions about, is it okay to lose this game? It's never okay to lose a game.
And I wanted to ask about Jalen. He's done.
You should have asked that first.
You should have asked that first. That's Nick Saban for you. Is it ever okay to lose a game? Of course not. I'm Nick Saban. We don't lose. That bite is classic. I mean, there's so many. So, and I think, Isaac, you love to play the gone bite.
Gone.
Man, nice, right? I mean, Nick just has so many great moments at the podium. And this week was another one of those, and I mean, come on, you don't throw that out at Nick Saban. You knew where that was going, right? I mean, hey, if you lose, do you still think you're going to be in the college football playoff? I mean, you don't even bring that up to Nick Saban because you know where it's going, right? He doesn't want to hear that maybe Alabama can lose in the SEC championship game and still get into the playoffs. Yeah, that's not going to happen. And, you know, you look at this game, and just this moment, and this is when it really starts to get exciting. I mean, we are, what, a week removed now from that final ranking coming out, you know? We're actually less than a week removed now from that. I mean, we're days away from finding out who exactly the top four teams of the college football world are going to be. And, yeah, the Crimson Tide going into Saturday's game will play number 15, Florida. And you look at what the Tide has done this year. It everybody knows it's the Tide and then everybody else. You know, it's Alabama and then everybody else. They are the favorite to go all the way and win yet another national championship. Alabama sits at 12-0. Alabama is a 24.5-point favorite over the Gators, who went 8-3 this season. And, you know, perfection is very hard to do. It's a hard thing to do in what is considered to be the best conference in college football. And Saban, this is a man who has won four national championships at Alabama, but has only had one unbeaten team. If you remember, that was that 14-0 squad back in 2009. He has won his last eight national or SEC championship games, but did lose in the playoff semifinals. If you remember, 2 years ago, Alabama riding the third longest win streak in both Alabama and SEC history, winning by an average of almost 25 points per game. And the Tide won 28 straight games twice from 1978 to 80 and from 91 to 90. Three. That's dominance. I mean, you know, hate him or love him, everybody has an opinion about Nick Saban. Especially, yes, Michigan State football fans. Especially LSU football fans like Isaac Constance. There are many individuals out there that have an opinion. You know, some love him, some hate him when it comes to Nick Saban. But no matter how you put it, When you look at the numbers, it's hard to argue with the numbers. He is one of the greatest to ever do it. And heck, when it's said and done, you could probably make a case that he is the best to ever do it. So Alabama etched in stone. That's going to be in concrete come December 4th when the final rankings are out. Ohio State, I think, is cemented at number two. But again, as we spent most of yesterday's current sports show talking about those final two spots, that's where it gets pretty interesting, folks. That's when you really start to scratch your chin and really ponder things. Now, I stated, now right now on November 29th, this is what my top four would look like. Alabama, Ohio State, of course, as I stated. Clemson and then Washington. And Michigan probably sitting on the outside, just on the outside looking in at number five. And still a lot of controversy. You know, just really briefly, just to chat about, because we spent the majority of yesterday's show as well diving into, was it a first down or wasn't it? Did Michigan, you know, get cheated out of that game? And, you know, it's crazy. I saw an article right after we got off our airwaves yesterday that I don't know who produced it. I don't even know how whoever produced this article had a lot of time on their hands. Because there's an article out apparently of the officials who officiated that Michigan and Ohio State game. And it goes into this background of the officials. You know, one official was, you know, an Ohio State diehard fan, right? The other official was actually reprimanded by the NCAA for bad officiating. And the other official, he was also a Buckeye fan. I don't know how credible that is to do research. I mean, what would they call up the FBI for that article, Isaac? I mean, that was pretty comical to me that a lot of, and it was crazy though, because I looked on my Facebook page and then you had all these Michigan fans coming out and saying, yeah, look at this, they cheated us, blah, 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 blah. And then I was listening to National Sports Radio today and they had a few national pundits actually come out and say that, yes, Michigan got cheated out of that game. And my jaw was just completely on the floor. I mean, you're really harping on. Now, granted, yeah, were there some bad calls in that game? Can you find me a game that you've sat on your couch and watched from top to bottom and pointed out a flawless job done by either the referees or the officials? You just can't. These guys are human just like us, all right? And especially in football, bang, bang plays happen all the time. It is impossible to referee or officiate a perfect game. You can come close, but I guarantee there are a few calls you're not going to be happy with. But there were a lot of them, though, in that Michigan-Ohio State game, granted. But Michigan didn't lose because of those calls, folks. Talk to your quarterback, Wilton Spate. Three turnovers. That's all I'm going to say there. I went on that rant yesterday. But it's just comical that, you know, Michigan fans still are finding it so hard to cope with this loss because the officiating and then the whole first down controversy was so in your face. Can we bury this, Isaac?
Yeah, what this is, and you know that I'm a student reporter, I like to bring in things from my other degree, which is political science. What this is, it's the same in politics. It's an echo chamber. People hear what they want to hear, and it keeps reverberating around. So they see somebody say, oh, we were cheated. Oh, that's right, we were cheated. Oh, that ref was an Ohio State fan? Yeah, of course he was an Ohio State fan. And this just gets perpetuated and propagated around the internet. It's ridiculous. No, nobody was cheated in this. Maybe y'all should have won by 35 if not for the refs instead of 28. Guess what? You blew a tremendous lead. That's all your fault. Mm-hmm. Michigan lost themselves this game. It's outrageous for anybody to come out and say, this was the referee's fault. This was not a game-winning touchdown where somebody clearly stepped out of bounds. It might have been a first down, first of all. Second of all, the thing is, you had still a whole nother defensive series to play after that first down.
Right.
Nobody cares about whether or not they got the fourth down. They could have easily been forced into kicking a field goal after that. Instead, you let them trot on into the end zone. That's your fault. The interception from Spate, first half, return for a touchdown. That's your
fault. The fumble on the goal line.
Yeah,
you know,
take responsibility.
I mean, come on, y'all.
But, hey,
I'm not surprised, though. When I saw, I immediately knew that Michigan fans are going to just harp on this, you know, and say, hey, the officials. But anyway, moving forward now, we spent a lot of time on yesterday's show talking about that. So my final two spots, and we have also Luke Robbins, our current sports production assistant, here in studio to break down, because I'm curious – if your guys' top four looks like mine right now. But, you know, just to make my case here when it comes to Clemson and Washington, right now at least, you know, Clemson is a team that has rebounded nicely since the loss to Pat Narduzzi in Pittsburgh. I think we can all agree with that. That happened 2 weeks ago. They've actually scored over 90 points combined against Wake Forest and South Carolina. And going back to the discussion that you know, we had last week, Isaac, about the whole Louisville situation and whether or not Louisville deserves to be in the top four. But that went over Louisville now, which is Louisville sits at number 11 right now. It is looking worse and worse after the Cardinals dropped two straight games. An ACC championship victory against Virginia Tech will still all but ensure the Tigers make the playoff, I believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that win against Louisville doesn't look as sexy as it once did now. So, and then you bring in the conversation with Deshaun Watson. And also, a quick point, the Heisman race has been really quiet this year. There's been really no talk about the Heisman race, but that's neither here nor there. I just wanted to bring that up, though, because compared to recent years, we just haven't been having that conversation as to who is going to win the Heisman Trophy. And, you know, I was looking up a stat yesterday. You know, there hasn't been a Heisman Trophy winner that lost his last two games of the season dating way back. Chris Fowler was on ESPN talking about that last night, and I'm like, wow. I mean, but I do think it still should go to Lamar Jackson. He has been that eye-poppingly good, a very good player. And then for Washington, agreed. I mean, and you look at Washington real briefly, Isaac, you know, Washington is a team I think that will sit at number four, that they're 11-1, three wins over ranked opponents this season. Its lone loss came against a surging USC team whose efforts to win, you know, the Pac-12 South fell just short with Colorado's win over number 22 Utah on Saturday night. And Colorado, talking about a team that's surging right now, right? And Colorado will now be the final roadblock for Washington in the Pac-12 title game after, of course, Colorado had that impressive win over Utah. So that's going to be an interesting game to watch, because I really do think that, man, Colorado does have a chance to knock off Washington, and that will also throw a wrench into things if that happens this weekend. But as of right now, I'm putting in Clemson and Washington as my number 3 and 4, right behind number 1 and 2, Alabama and Ohio State, respectively. Isaac?
Yeah, I certainly agree. There's some room for this to shift around quite a lot in the final few weeks, but at the same time, right now, I think the top four is more or less set. I think you have to give number one spot, like you said, to Alabama. I mean, you don't have to. It's forced by law. You are coerced to. There is no other feasible option on this planet. You could throw them over the Cleveland Browns if they were in the NCAA.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
without a doubt,
Alabama, easy number one. Ohio State, easy number two. Thing is, they played that game well. They emerged the victor. Kudos to them. Number three, I also go Clemson, although I think, and I've said this before, they remind me of Florida State, 3 years ago with Jameis Winston at the helm, the second time around, though. Not after winning the national championship, but after they came back, went to the playoffs, and they were 2 years ago, I believe, actually, to they went down, forgetting, maybe it was Ohio State, but
yeah, maybe
they went down, and it really was just nothing that would look that great from the team. So that's what it reminds me of, is a similar appearance in the college football playoff as that Florida State team did. It really wasn't anything nice, and I don't think this will be either. At the same time, they are the defending runner-ups. You give them the benefit of the doubt. Dabo Swinney is still a master behind the mic and on the sidelines.
So have you converted now? You believe that Clemson deserved to be in there right now?
Yes, and I always have thought that they deserved a decent spot. It's just, I don't think they'll do anything in the playoff. That's
okay,
my
personal
opinion.
It's coming from more so the eye test then. I mean,
yes,
when you evaluate, and the eye test comes into play here, because, again, this is what makes the college football playoff so beautiful to me. And that's why I think that Michigan still has a shot, because when you look at the eye test Michigan,
yep.
they are, you can look and say realistically that they can compete with anybody in the nation. So, and you saw what they did against Ohio State. So I see where you're going with
that. Exactly. So Clemson, like I said, definitely that number three spot for me, but where will they actually end up at the end of the season? I'm not sure. I don't think they'll look that good in the college football playoff. Number four, Washington for me as well. I think that team has earned the slot. USC, everybody was doubting them 2 weeks ago when they beat Washington. This team's won eight straight, I believe. They started off the season 1-3. Then you've got Wisconsin for me at number five, just because I think there's some room for that to be shaken up. But at the same time, right now, you give Wisconsin number five, you see how they do in the Big Ten championship game, Michigan number six.
I still think Michigan gets that fifth spot. Luke, how do you evaluate this whole thing? What's your top four look like?
It's got to be the same, I think.
So you're going Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington as well then?
Yeah, I don't see the argument against them. But I will say that college football is crazy, and I can see a situation where you have two Big Ten teams in the finals. I see a situation where maybe because Ohio State doesn't play in this Big Ten championship, that for whatever reason, you know, they leave them out. To me, this is what it is now, but we still have one more week to go. Anything can happen.
That is so true. And we know that, and I want to ask you this because we posed this question yesterday. Do you think that Michigan still has a realistic shot at possibly etching out one of those four spots?
I would say so, but it's very slim. You know, not being able to play in the Big Ten championship game. And
so do you put the Big Ten champion in then?
I would put the Big Ten champion over Michigan.
Okay. What do you folks think? You've heard the phone lines going off. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to know, what does your top four look like? And what did you think about Nick Saban's rant? Because I will say, there is a true message, I think, behind the emotional rant of what Nick Saban had to say. I think that we've become so caught up in the top four, you know, that we have forgotten about the rest of college football. We've forgotten about all the other bowl games. You know, right now, all we care about is who is going to be playing for that national championship, who is going to be in the Peach Bowl, who is going to be in the Fiesta Bowl. And I do think that at the same time, it's made it so intriguing on a week-to-week basis, but in a way, it has taken away just some of the lore that the overall college football game provides when it comes to other sexy bowl games, not just the Peach and Fiesta this year. So I see where Nick was going there. And, yeah, and the whole question about, hey, I mean, if you lose this game, do you still think you'll be in? To answer it, Nick Saban didn't answer that. But to answer his question, even if they were to lose that SEC championship game, you better believe that Alabama is still going to be in the college football playoff. That would be insane in the membrane not to have them there. All right, folks, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. In just a second, we're going to chat about the Detroit Lions. We do have a caller right now. I want to get him in before we hit the first break. One of our dear friends of the show, Jody from Canada. You are on Current Sports. What's up, Jody?
How you doing, Alan? I just want to say a few things, man. I'm not going to get into the ratings and all that because that's all done for different reasons and TV exposure and la-di-di-di-da and playing overtimes. You know, my era, it was a tie.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to talk a little more about Saturday. I hate Michigan, hate Ohio State, you know, other than their medical and their academics. But sports-wise, I'm not a Michigan or Ohio State fan. Let that be known. Mm. However, Michigan did run up and down the court on them boys, but you mean the field. But you know who really blew that game for them? They can get mad at the call. I was mad because I thought, and you know, for me to not, you know, to see want Michigan to win, I had to have been, you know, insane myself. But
right.
What happened? Two things happened in that game that really, really made a difference. You know, not just the turnovers, because even they were whooping that butt with the turnovers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened was two things, and I said it early in the game, and I wish y'all had a chat room and even you would say I was right.
Mm-hmm.
When Michigan was trying to throw the ball, they never threw the ball to their backs. Every time that doggone back checked out, he was running a pattern, and they were trying to throw it deeper into the windows, but not deep enough to make Ohio State safeties never had to step back.
So you would have liked to see some screen passes to,
You don't have to like to see it. This is how you play offensive football, passing, right. Because, see, I'm going to tell you, we started throwing the ball back in the late 75 when everybody else was running 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Big Ten, everybody was 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and Darrell Rogers came in throwing the ball. You know, so what you do is you throw the ball deep, the first player early in the game, even if you don't complete it. Because what it allows that defense to think, whoops, they may go deep.
Exactly. And it has it in the back of their respective minds. And again, you know, and I also think as well, it would have boded well better for Wilton Spate, seeing as though he was coming off that collarbone injury. So maybe a few short passes would have helped a bit especially when it comes to his accuracy.
Yes, you see, you throw the ball deep first, and that makes that safety start and the corner start to worry. Whoops, you know, they may not run these short patterns. Whoop, they may go deep. So you're playing a little differently. And then you can start dropping your ball inside. But they never created any kind of fear in Ohio State's mind that they were going to try to beat them deep. And the second thing that really happened, you throw it deep, then you throw it to your backs. Mm. The second thing that happened is near the end of the game, and not the overtime, because when you get to overtime, I normally figure the home team's going to win. But, you know, when you get getting to the overtime, when Ohio State was driving for that last field goal, mm-hmm. Michigan was in disarray.
Yeah, they were.
Because they couldn't even come off the ball. They were tired. And nobody came to rescue them, and that was Harbaugh's job.
Right.
To call timeout, even though Ohio State was running, his boys were tired, and they couldn't seem to get it together, even though they held him for the field goal.
Right,
you know, there was
right.
one play where one of the linemen came up from Michigan and was right in the quarterback's face and stopped because he thought something was going on, and they threw the ball down to about the 8.
Now, what drive are you talking about? Are you talking about that final drive, the scoring drive for Ohio State?
No, I'm talking about, I think it was the drive that gave them the field goal.
They gave them the field goal. Okay, gotcha.
Michigan was so tired and worn out that I'm sitting there going, call timeout. Your boy, you know, I know, you know, you don't want to call timeout, you know, for the offense, but if you can't even come off the ball to defend, you better get some Gatorade or something in them, boys.
Right. I hear you. And that's the thing that hasn't been talked about. We've been talking about the officiating so much.
Harbaugh loses them one game a year.
Right.
Maybe two. Last year, he lost the Michigan State game, and I'm a Spartan.
There
ain't no way in nobody's world we were supposed to win that game.
That's so,
I mean, yeah. Come on now.
The perfect end. That's so true.
That was like War of the Worlds. People jumping off a building. 10 seconds left, and you're going to put an Australian rule kicker in there and have guys run down to cover a punt.
Exactly. And you know what Michigan State did. I don't think they had one guy back. You know what I mean?
No, they didn't.
Right.
I'm like, no timeouts, 11 seconds. Harbaugh fell asleep. Fell asleep Saturday because he's so emotional.
All right. Well, I want to add a quick question, Jody.
Uh-huh.
Do you still think Michigan has a shot at making the playoff?
No. It's a shame. Oh, come on. I mean, they beat Colorado, who's now playing in the Pac-12 Cup Championship or whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something for us to talk about in the papers until the young boys on the basketball team or Michigan's boys or Reggie Jackson comes back or the Red Wings do something. That's just conversation. They have 2 losses. I don't see it. You know,
okay.
But if they travel well, they may. You know, but I don't see them being in the playoffs, and they can only blame themselves.
Jody from Canada. Jody, thanks so much. Appreciate the call.
All right, man.
You got it. Love it. Jody always gives. I love him. He's one of my favorite callers, Isaac. I also want to bring up this. You know, we talked about leadership for the MSU football team. I was a bit shocked as to what took place this past weekend.
Me too.
With with Demetrius Cox. If you didn't hear in our Quicket headliners, Demetrius Cox, starting defensive back, team captain for this past year's MSU football team. Cox is stating that he has been falsely accused of a misdemeanor assault last week. Cox, he's not been formally charged. He has 10 days from the offense to appear in court here in East Lansing. He was released from jail at the East Lansing Police Department sometime on Thursday morning. And if you remember, he did not play against Penn State. Leadership was a problem for this team, fellas. And I think that's going to be a dialogue that when we look back at how in disarray this season was, leadership is going to be at the forefront of that conversation as to why Michigan State didn't succeed amongst the injuries and amongst the youth as well. So let's hit our first break. When we come back, again, we will be inviting to the show Herb Brogan, head coach of the state championship Jackson Lumen Christie Titan football team. You don't want to miss that chat. And we will also give you a preview of Michigan State and Duke and chat about the Detroit Lions sitting pretty at numero uno in the NFC North. Don't go anywhere. Come on back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Before moving along, and I want to chat about the Detroit Lions just a sec here, but more bad news for Mr. Johnny Manziel, former Cleveland Browns and Texas A&M QB. Johnny Football is being sued by a bar employee who says that his nose was broken when Manziel punched him. I'm not surprised here. The lawsuit filed Monday by Eric Newton in Travis County, Texas, seeks up to $1 million in damages for the incident, which allegedly occurred on September 6th at an Austin bar while Manziel was attending a private party. Oh, boy. Johnny Manziel. He's going to be on an ESPN 30 for 30, I'm sure, in about maybe like 3 to 5 years. I guarantee it, folks. All right. The Detroit Lions are sitting at numero uno in the NFC North. I really can't believe I'm saying that. I didn't think I would be saying that here after the Thanksgiving break. But I tell you what, you got to get credit where credit is due. And right now, the Detroit Lions are finding ways to win. You know, and I mentioned how this team has been playing with fire throughout this entire season. I don't think there's been a game where at one point in the fourth quarter, they have actually not trailed. I mean, they've been, and I'll tell you what, it's a catch-22, though, because, you know, it's one of those things where you look at and say, all right, if you keep playing with fire, you got to get burned one of these weeks, right? You know, there would be, you know, especially for Lions fans out there, you know, as a Lions fan, you would want to have at least one game where you've got a comfortable lead in the fourth, and this team looks convincing. Because I tell you what, when the Lions win these close games, Lions fans out there, no matter how long you've been a fan of the team and no matter how positive you are when evaluating this year's squad, you can't help but think in the back of your mind, you can't help but think, oh, but these have been close wins. You know, when is our luck going to run out? You can't help but think that, right? That's just a natural adage to go about if you've constantly been trailing in the fourth quarter but yet been pulling out wins. Now, at the same time, when it comes to the overall mindset of this team, this is a squad that does not believe at any point in the game that they can't win. And that's encouraging. That is very encouraging. You know, I was chatting with Luke before our show today, and I brought this up multiple times. Matthew Stafford is in, and he deserves to be in, the most valuable player conversation. Without a doubt, folks. I mean, if you look at that game on Thanksgiving, you know, that win against Minnesota. I mean, he was fantastic, I thought, for the most part. And, you know, he just has this resiliency about him that, and his leader, you talk about leadership. Matthew Stafford has exemplified candid leadership throughout this entire year with the squad. And you know what the big difference is from other years? That offensive line is finding a way to protect him. You know, he's not taking the hits that he was taking last year. He's not eating grass most of the game. And that's encouraging. And, you know, even with the absence with Calvin Megatron Johnson, at the same time, that absence with CJ has allowed us to really see what Matthew Stafford can do as far as spreading the football around, as far as that conversation is concerned. Because I really thought, I mean, and heck, I get it, because you got the best wide receiver in the game. You know, one of the best wide receivers we've ever seen. And he's so big, he's so lengthy, he's so athletic that you feel like it doesn't matter if all 11 guys were to surround him, you still believe that he's going to somehow jump up and catch the football. I get that. But he forced it way too many times when Calvin Johnson was a member of the Honolulu Blue. Now we're seeing Matthew Stafford go through his reads and pick apart the secondary. He's playing absolutely fantastic. And Marvin Jones Jr., who had went silent a bit the 2 weeks prior to that game, that Thanksgiving game against Minnesota, we saw him have some solid production. Golden Tate, who had a slow start to the year, is really picking up. Theo Riddick has shown signs that, you know, hey, if he's shifty. Theo Riddick is a shifty player. He's speedy and he's quick. And I love him. And in the defense, Darius Slay, how fitting was that? Darius Slay, who's battled a few injuries this year, he's had some health concerns this season, but Darius Slay makes that defense so much better when he is suited up on a Sunday. He ends the game on a pick. He's the hero. Game over. Slay is so good, folks. So good. I actually even saw him at the Detroit Pistons game when they took on the I believe it was the Oklahoma City Thunder. The day after, he was out there tossing basketballs around to the fans. I mean, Slay is big time. So I really believe in this Detroit Lions football team, Isaac. As crazy as that may sound, but I will say this: I'm approaching with a blinking yellow light. Because at the end of the day, this is still the Detroit Lions. And I think it suits up well for them because if you look at – now, again, granted, the Green Bay Packers did win last night. And they're still in the conversation. The Dallas Cowboys, my Cowboys, will actually play the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. If you are a Lions fan, you will be rooting for the star this Sunday. But the Lions, this is their division crown to lose.
It is. And you're absolutely right to point out the guys that you did. And it – started off looking about as inauspicious of a season as it could have.
Inauspicious. I love that word. Isaac.
Great word. 1-3, though, for the Lions to start off. Darius Slay was time and time again the victim of receivers bearing down on him. Then everything changed. Darius Slay, or Raphael Bush, first made the game-winning interception. I believe that was against Philadelphia. Then Darius Slay got it against Los Angeles. Then from there, it just started all tumbling, and the Lions have only lost one game since. It's been great. Matthew Stafford, you know, sometimes you do have to pat yourself on the back. I said before the year that Matthew Stafford could have conceivably maybe his best year as a quarterback. And I thought the line was much improved. I love the addition of Teyard Ecker on the line. I thought the Lions did a bunch of good things. But at the same time, what I thought was is Calvin Johnson, I call him the human safety net. You just throw something his direction, and there's a 50% chance he catches it.
It was a catch 22 at times. Exactly. So I like those percentages, yeah, but
yeah, no, gosh. Exactly. You can't rely on a 50% completion rate for your quarterback. Matthew Stafford came into this league with great discretion, a great rocket arm, and now he's really showing it off. Marvin Jones and Golden Tate, it's not like these are subsidiary receivers. They don't lack anything on anybody in the league. Mm-hmm. The thing is, they're not Calvin Johnson. But now Stafford has to spread it around. He's done that wonderfully. And this team is getting the dividends of that production.
Also want to call out Anquan Boldin. A huge signing for this team heading into this year. He actually had a team high. 7 catches for 69 yards on Thanksgiving Day. And I also, you know, other than Slay and I also want to bring up, you know, the linebacker core for the Lions, Tahir Whitehead. 12 tackles. And even Josh Bynes had 4, including 1 for a loss. So you're seeing other guys step up. And I even think Eric Ebron is clearly having the best season of his Detroit Lions career now. And they're finally starting to see dividends pay off for the player that they drafted from North Carolina. So.
And the last time this team gave up more than 20 points, that was against Los Angeles. So the defense has came such a long way. Also, a big addition to the offense has just been the core of running backs. Not only Theo Riddick and Abdullah, like you mentioned, but also having Zach Zenner out of the backfield. They're so versatile, all three of them.
So true. Let's hit our second break, Isaac. When we come back, we will invite our guest for today's Current Sports, the one, the only, Herb Brogan, head coach of the Jackson Lumen Christie Titans football team. Yes, that squad is a state champion. We'll explain when we come back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. The Jackson Lumen Christie Titans are state champs. That's right. They were crowned as the kings of the gridiron over the Thanksgiving break in D6 with a 26-14 victory over Maple City Glen Lake. Lumen Christie is now 9-2 in state final contest and ended a 7-year drought since its last championship. That was a 42-7 win over Clare in the Division 5 game back in 09. Right now, we invite the head coach of the Titans to Current Sports, Herb Brogan. Herb, how you doing, my man? I know you must be feeling quite well.
yes, we are. We had a great weekend.
Now, this is the first state title in 7 years, Herb. What is that feeling like when that horn sounds and you get to celebrate with the team after a long road, a long journey culminating at Ford Field? What was that moment like for you?
Well, to be honest with you, there's almost a sense of relief that you got it done. You know, we struggled a little bit the last couple of years, and the kids are obviously elated. Couldn't be more excited, and there's a great deal of excitement that goes on as well with the coaches. But I'd be lying to you if I said that we didn't feel a little bit of just a little sign of relief as well.
Now, is it relief because there's so much? That, you know, so much preparation, so many practices. The grind is certainly real when you're trying to chase a state championship. Is that the reason why you put that in perspective?
Well, it is a grind. And I said to some of the coaches just yesterday, you know, 14 games is enough. You really wouldn't want to keep going. And, you know, we've always felt that if you had a team that you think can go the distance, that you might not be nearly as good early in the year because – it doesn't pay to really work as hard as you can early in the year and to beat them up a little bit because if that's the case, you're going to wear down at the end. And we were really fortunate with injuries this year, and I think maybe that philosophy paid some dividends there.
Now, I mentioned how it's been 7 years since you all were able to experience a state championship win, Herb. And you guys are 9-2 in state final contest. Herb, there are multiple schools across this great state of Michigan that don't even know what it's like to even get to the big dance, let alone win it. Again, you guys are 9-2 when it comes to that big stage. But with that being said, when you take into account the success that this program has had, did 7 years feel like an eternity?
It felt like a long time because we had a couple teams that we thought were capable of winning it. 2 years ago, we had a great team with, you know, Kari Willis, who's up there at Michigan State right now.
Of course, yeah.
And we felt that, that team had a chance, and it did. We had a one-point loss to Monroe St. Mary's, who was the eventual state champion. So, you know, we were certainly capable. We didn't get it done. It becomes a little bit of frustration. And I said to one of the reporters after the game that you wouldn't trade the level of success that we've had ever, but it does create sometimes an unrealistic level of expectations, I think. I said to one of our other coaches, I thought about this the other day, over the last 7 years since the time we won the last one, we've probably felt a little bit of a disappointment, but in that time period we've had 63 wins, so... You know, we were averaging 9 wins a season and feeling like we weren't quite as successful as what we should have been. So it all depends, I guess, on the perspective that you bring into it.
Right, and you know, when you want to be one of the elite programs, I mean, it's not unfair to expect that kind of level of success from your team, though, right? I mean, if you want to dance with the big dogs, you got to think like a big dog, right, Coach?
Well, it's our goal every year to reach state finals.
Right.
You know, your number one goal is to get to the playoffs because you can't do it unless you do that. And so it's not nearly as important today as it was 25, 30 years ago to be undefeated or 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that magic six number. And, you know, the league we play in is a good football league. It's a number of schools that are, you know, a little bit bigger than what we are. So we go in every year figuring it's going to be a struggle to get through that league. And we felt this year that if we get into the playoffs, we'd have a chance to make some noise. And that's exactly what we did.
Herb, at what point in the season did you know this team could be special and could make a run like they did?
Well, you know, we were a young team, and we thought we'd be a little bit things would be a little rough early, particularly since we opened the season with Grand Rapids West Catholic, and they were, and we got beat up really good in that ball game, and then 2 weeks later we lost a tougher game to Battle Creek Harper Creek, another really good ball club, and I came out of that game not too frustrated because we competed really well, and I felt that. We were improving at that point. And then the next 2 weeks against Marshall and Coldwater, we came up with wins that we probably wouldn't have expected early in the year. So that really propelled us on our way.
Stat of the day for you in that state championship dub, or at least stat of the day for me, was, Herb, how you all were able to outrush Glen Lake. 298 yards, just 2 yards short of 300, to just 4 for Glen Lake. Kyle Mender, Bo Bell had a field day. What allowed them to get loose? And was that stat surprising to you?
No, because we've been over the 300-yard mark a number of times, and Bo had carried the ball in the past 39 times, one ball game, and 40 in another. So he was used to shouldering a big workload if he needed to. Our offensive line is kind of the backbone of our football team. All year long, we tried to make our name rushing the ball. And certainly in the playoffs, we did the same thing. And that was our goal going in. We felt if we could be effective running the ball, that the play-action passing game was worked. And even though we didn't throw it a lot, we threw it effectively. But running the ball was our biggest weapon all year long.
Certainly. And I looked at a stat as well. I believe you guys threw, and correct me if I'm wrong, just 7 times throughout that entire game. Is that right, Herb?
That's right. That's right. But we hit 5 of them, and... 5 of them, and had another drop. So, you know, we threw it effectively. Threw one quarterback, threw it 6 times. Bell threw one halfback pass. In a big spot that made a big play for us.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the head coach of the Jackson Lumen Christie Titans football team, state champions in D6, the great Herb Brogan. Now, Herb, you mentioned, you know, how that offensive line is the backbone and was throughout this entire season for your squad. What makes that offensive line so dynamic, and how big is that group?
Well, we've got one tackle that we're graduating this year, Zach Irwin, who's a big kid. He's about 280 pounds, 6'3", and he's a really, really good football player. The rest of the line is, I'd say average size, any place between 195 and 220. But our offensive line coach, Dan Horn, does a great job with them. They're technically really sound. They know what they're doing. They come off the ball well. And when you have a back like Bo Bell, you don't have to knock people 10 yards off the ball. If you can create a seam, generally he's going to find that seam and make a big play out of it.
Now, when you look at the game plan that Glen Lake had approaching you all in that matchup on Friday, what kind of looks did Glen Lake throw at you, and was the game plan from them to try and slow you all down? Was that expected from Glen Lake? Did they do anything new and different throughout that game?
Well, they didn't. Offensively, we felt they'd throw the ball. We knew their quarterback was really good, and coming in, it looked like they were a little bit run heavy, but they played in a snowstorm in the semifinal week, so the statistics were a little bit off there. But mm-hmm. we felt they'd throw it on offense, which they did, and they threw it quite effectively. Defensively, we couldn't diagram exactly what they were going to do, but we knew that they were going to be aggressive and put a lot of people in the box and blitz us really hard. And they disrupted us a little bit in that first half at times, but I think our line did a really good job adjusting to it. You know, they're playing a little bit of, as I said, a little bit of Russian roulette on the pitches, because when we pitched the ball, their corners were coming 100 miles an hour and making the pitch difficult. But that's why we threw the pitch pass and made a big play out of that. But they're a well-coached team. You knew that they were going to see some wrinkles you hadn't seen before, and I thought that they were very aggressive and played really well.
Herb, what a moment for your team. What a moment for your coaching staff. What a moment for the school. What is the buzz around the community like and has been like since Friday?
Well, there's been a lot of excitement leading up to it. We had a great crowd there. They took 16 or 17 buses down and plus all the other people that drove themselves. But I haven't talked to very many people that either weren't at the game themselves or watching it on TV. So, as you said, it's been 7 years. People have been hoping for another one, and the fact that we were able to do that has got a lot of people excited.
Herb, how young is your team? How sustainable is this kind of success next season?
Well, we should have a pretty good ball club next year. We only had 12 seniors on the team. We graduate a very good running back and an excellent offensive tackle and a couple of good, really good defensive players. But we've got about 75% of our starters back, and we started three sophomores this year, and the freshmen started at times. So we've got quite a bit back, and we're excited about next season. It becomes a different challenge. It's one thing to respond to failures, a little bit easier to motivate them. One of the hardest things to do is get people to work hard after they've tasted success. And we did that this year, so that's one of the things that we're going to have to attack in the off season.
Well, I'll tell you what, enjoy this one while you got it, right, Herb? And I love to ask this question to anyone who has won a championship of any sort, let alone a state championship in football. Just a very to-the-point question here for you, Herb. What does it take to become a state champion?
Well, it takes hard work. It takes hard work, number one. It takes getting everybody on the same page. Your kids, your coaches, your kids with each other, parents buying in. It just when everyone, P.J. Fleck at Western talks about everybody rowing the boat. And that's the concept, I guess, that I would be talking about. When everybody's pulling in the same direction, it's a lot easier to do.
That is so true. Herb, did you guys have a slogan this season?
Our slogan was champions do extra.
I love that. I love that. Well, we'll keep doing extra, Herb, because it's working out for you.
Thanks a bunch. We really appreciate it.
You got it. Herb Brogan, head coach of the state championship Jackson Lumen Christie Titan football team. That was fantastic stuff. And tomorrow we hope to have Jeremy Miller, our other local team, head coach of the Pomona Westphalia Pirates, who also won a state championship over the Thanksgiving weekend. That was a great chat. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. We will dive into the Detroit Pistons as they take on the Charlotte Hornets tonight. That's right, MJ's team. The Detroit Red Wings take on Dallas. That's right, the Stars. And we, of course, will recap the Michigan State and Duke matchup. Isaac, real quick, you think it's going to be a close game?
Yeah, I think it'll be close, but Duke wins for me.
You think Duke wins? I think that it may be a blowout. I think MSU loses.
Duke's got all these injuries is the thing. They've got three of their top freshmen who are out, including Harry Giles. So maybe MSU can compete.
Luke, what do you think?
I hope it's not a blowout. That's all I'm going to say.
You're just hoping it's not a blowout. All right. Well, we have plenty of conversation on it tomorrow, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. You have been listening to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.